Hi, everybody. Thanks for joining us. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Peter Llewellyn. I run the services at medcomsnetworking.com. So, information resources, activities, and so on for people who work across the world in and around medical communications, medical education, medical publishing, and the associated businesses. And you'll find lots of activity, lots of resource. You'll find lots and lots of videos based on webinars like this over at Network Pharma TV. And a particular shout out to the people who want to come into Medcoms, maybe as a medical writer or an account manager, whatever. You'll find a lot of information over at firstmedcomsjob.com and so on and so forth. So there's lots to go and have a look at if you've not already had a look at it. What I do with these webinars is, and they're great fun. We can involve people from all over the world, bringing experts together to talk about any manner of topics. Today's webinar is a little bit different, I guess, to the usual one, in that we're specifically following up a webinar from last week, from the 31st of January, which you can go and find on Network Pharma TV. The recording's there. When we were talking as a panel, the same panel, about the changing, or we were questioning, is it a new era of medical writing in medcoms? And I think we're all basically saying it does feel like a new era. So there's a very lively discussion. But we did end up feeling that we'd possibly not address some of the questions, or there was just more we could talk about, I guess. So we've decided to follow up with today's, which is specifically a question and answer session. Well, that's what we're going to try for. So we've got an audience again today from around the world. And thank you very much for joining us. We would like the audience to be joining in and sending us their questions in the chat. Although we've got a few to kick us off from last time, just to set the scene again, can I do what we always do and have an introduction from everybody? So, just as usual, we'll go in alphabetical order. Annette, can we go with you first? Just tell us who you are and where you are, what you do.
Thanks. Welcome, everyone. It's great to be here again. Had a really nice discussion last time. So my name's Annette Keith. I am Executive Scientific Director at Langland, which is part of the Publicis Group. So I lead the medical writing function within Langland. I've been in the industry almost 20 years, and I'm very passionate about medical writing, the value that medical writers can add, and how we're kind of evolving for the future. So looking forward to another good discussion today.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us. Ellie, you're next. Eleanor Steele, tell us who you are and where you are and what you're doing.
Hello, I am Eleanor Steele. I work as the Medcoms mentor. I have been in Medcoms almost 20 years as well, and I started off within agencies and worked my way up. So I was leading teams in a few different agencies, but since 2018, I have been freelance, and since 2020, I have been the Medcoms mentor, providing specialist training and mentoring to medical writers of all career stages. So that is me.
Thanks very much. And Liz, who are you? Where are you? And what do you do?
That's like a game show. Hi, so I'm Liz Stutz. I'm originally from the UK. I moved to Switzerland about 15 years ago to train as a medical writer. And then I no, 20 years ago for the medical writer training, but I've been working as a medical writer, and then moved into more the account management side, and the strategic side of things. And then a couple of years ago, I took a jump to the other side of the fence. So coming from a long agency background, then now working in-house, setting up an internal kind of agency model inside Roche of medical writers. So yeah, that's me. And
Excellent, thanks. Oh, sorry, and I was going to say there seems to be a sweet spot around 20 years, doesn't there? Although I have to say I've been around a bit longer than that. I'm the old guy in the
no.
room sort of thing. So great to have you. Lots of experience and some different perspectives here, which is is interesting, hopefully. Liz, I'm going to ask you to do what you did last time, and set us the scene a little bit. Are we entering a new era of medical writing is the question, and you have a number of points to for us to consider. So let's start with you again, set the scene. Thank you.
So I'll do the condensed version, hopefully. It felt a bit this year like we were on the cusp of something as we started looking to the kind of what was happening and looking at things coming together. It's not just one thing here or one thing there. It's kind of a the confluence of multiple factors that have been happening for a while, and some of them we know about, and some of them maybe we haven't quite seen how fast they've gone along. Things like obviously AI and Gen AI particularly, but we're going to try and keep away from that today, hopefully a little, and talk about the other things. So omnichannel is kind, the buzzword, digital transformation in general, also the way that pharma companies are working, who are generally kind of the biggest clients for medcoms, the way they research, the way they produce, and the way they launch new compounds and therapies, in fact, not just products in the old sense. So lots of different things changing. Also the way we work as people post-COVID, more remote, different places, and just generally the way we engage with customers, which is obviously HCPs and public and patients. It's all changing because the world is changing, and I guess the question is, medcoms and pharma traditionally have been a long way behind the curve, but Where are we, and when is it actually going to really bite?
Excellent. Okay. So, look, you've said, we'll all say, and I want to repeat the fact that I'm not wanting to spend 45 minutes just talking about AI, which did end up dominating the conversation last week. But, but it is a big thing and we can't ignore it completely. And from the comments that came in last week, and for what it's worth, let's be honest about it, with everybody, we took the chat from last week and we ran it through ChatGPT. In fact, I think it was run through a couple of different models in the end. Very strong themes coming out in terms of AI and the challenge of AI, and what does that mean? If we take a question just simply as it was put to us last week, do we think the medical writing industry will shrink as a result of AI coming in? Why don't we just run with that a little bit? But I do want to broaden the conversation, but it will allow us to broaden the discussion now. Liz, you've made the point, and let's make the point again. Questions often get asked about AI, but AI is a bit, what does AI mean? What we're probably mostly focusing on today is generative AI, and how it affects medical writing. But let's just take that simple question and see where we end up. And Liz, why don't you kick us off? Is the medical writing business going to shrink because of, let's be specific, generative AI? Just give us your first thoughts.
First of all, my first thought is I've just remembered I need to just clarify that I'm speaking on behalf of myself today and not in
Okay.
my capacity as a person with Roche. This is all my opinion from my own experience, just to be completely transparent.
Fair point, fair point.
I think it's going to massively change how we do things. And I think in terms of the Gen AI thing, I think we have to embrace the fact that it's a tool that we have at our disposal and that ultimately clients will be less happy to pay for something that they think they could do themselves. Well, they've always done that anyway, but that they think they could do themselves with AI. So I think we have to understand it's probably going to put a cost pressure on what we do and also probably a personnel pressure at some point because overall there'll not be as much work to go around. And then how many people will we need to do the same things? I think my biggest concern is that it will take away a lot of the, I said again, sorry, but grunt work from medical writers, the stuff that actually is what earns us the money. It's a bit like in a restaurant, it's not always the food that earns the money, it's more the alcohol and the markups on things that are kind of pass-through costs. In the same way, the artistry of medical writing will still exist, the creativeness and the ability to produce something wonderful. But a lot of the thing that the padding that goes around that to make it worthwhile doing will kind of maybe be taken by AI tools, and not just generative AI, but also just general digital tools that make things so much more, productive and so much faster. That's my opinion.
Okay, which is great. And I mean, it was interesting as you were talking. There's several directions we could go in. Points you made in there, and we'll pick those up in the conversation. But let's just keep this a little bit sort of high level at the moment. Annette, go on. Tell us from your point of view at Langland, is AI going to change your, I don't know, the numbers of medical writers and the types of medical writers and so on?
I
Let's just keep
think.
the simple
I
question.
think at the moment there's seems to be plenty of work. So, I think that I agree with Liz. I think that we have to embrace it. We have to use it to be more efficient. We can't, it would be unethical for us to charge our clients to do something that we, it takes us 5 hours to do that we could do in a minute. That wouldn't be the right thing for us to do. So I think it's more about the changing nature of the role and dialing up other aspects of the medical writing role. Than some of the, like, as Liz called it, the grunt work. So I think it's more of a change than a kind of downsizing. But I mean, as the world evolves anyway, we used to do things that mean everything was done by post and everything took forever. And now you can just email things back and forth. So things happen more quickly. And then the expectations become that you do more in less time. And I think probably the same thing will happen.
Exactly. And the workload just seems to get bigger and bigger and bigger, sort of thing. So the technology seems to open up the work rather than close it down, sort of thing. Again, just keep this fairly high level. Ellie, what's your view on that question?
I think it's about how things are going to open up what is possible. Something that I have seen talked about in terms of publishing is that there's the capacity to do things like AI-generated audiobooks. But that doesn't mean that everybody's going to want an AI-generated audiobook. Some people want to hear a proper narrator and they want to have that kind of personality behind what they're doing. And I think it's quite similar in terms of medical writing. We're going to potentially have a broad range of things that could be done by AI, but some people are going to want the bespoke version that's actually kind of done by humans and have that interaction and have that sort of capacity to enhance it with that human touch. But also, it's possibly going to end up meaning that some of the stuff that we spend a lot of time doing can be done by AI, which will open up other things that we haven't necessarily even thought of or haven't explored because we haven't had the capacity or the tools to actually make it feasible. So I think there's going to be a change in the kind of work that we do. I don't know what that's going to mean in terms of the workforce, but I think it's possibly going to enhance the creative side and have more of the grunt work, as Liz was saying, taken over by AI.
Okay, just let's just pin you down a little bit more because we're talking quite rightly. That's my question was quite at a general level, but let's be a bit more specific. And we've got Anonymous coming in with how are you actually implementing AI in projects? Just be a little bit more specific. And again, and I'm going to start with Ellie and go backwards. Can you give us a couple of examples where you see let's stick with generative AI having an impact already? Can you see areas where it will have more of an impact more quickly? There was, and just to feed you a line, there was a question specifically last week about the this person was thinking the publications type businesses at higher risk from AI than more creative brand comms. So again, that was a sort of a flavor, the sort of question. Just give us, each of you, just give us a little bit of a flavor of how you see it actually working in practice now and then the impact it might have. See what I
Yeah,
mean?
so I think the publication side is definitely somewhere that AI could be incredibly useful and save a lot of time. So when you're thinking about the introduction to a paper and you're sort of summing up what is currently known about a particular area, having an AI tool that can kind of just pull together these are the main points, so that you've got a starting point is an incredibly useful thing to have, because I know any writer is always a little bit kind of apprehensive at the blank page. And so having something that gets you started and can give you the starting point to go and do some further research rather than having to kind of go, so what am I searching for? What am I thinking about? I think that's incredibly useful. But also reframing what you've got for different audiences. So plain language summaries, or taking a paper and summarizing it for different HCP audiences. I think those kind of things could be done by AI much more efficiently than getting humans to do it. Although I think there is still going to be the need for human checking and editing, especially at the moment when we all know that AI tools can sometimes make things up or elaborate in the wrong direction or just get the wrong end of the stick. So I think there does still need to be human input. But I think those kind of things could be simplified and made much quicker with AI tools.
Okay, and we're all nodding away. But again, you're covered. There's a lot of ground covered in there. Liz, just be. Let's go to you. And I that some of what Liz has been talking about feeds into what you talk about in terms of you within a pharma company or someone within a pharma company, centralizing information and then spinning out in different directions in different ways much more easily with the use of AI tools. But again, do you see areas where it can have a quick impact and maybe where it be, having an impact over time?
So I think one thing
Something.
where it's what the key to emphasize here is because AI is in its kind of infancy in adoption in pharma particularly, and because of the caution around accuracy and data and letting kind of confidential data out into AI tools and things, obviously a lot of there's kind of a long lag phase in terms of companies trying to develop their own in-house solutions instead of using ones that are on the open market, because obviously there's a lot of data exchange. And I think so there was a question specifically in the audience about how industry generally is implementing AI. And I think one example would be I went to the Veeva summit in it was last year now, and it's actually, Veeva is very much around the pharma industry and almost exclusively so. And seeing the things that they can do and the things that they're kind of pushing and developing is actually, frankly, slightly terrifying. Like right from
I
the
admit.
very start, right from the very start, like clinical and all the way through the way that you store data, handle data, analyze data, use data, use kind of continuous loop feedback and implement data into how you then create and localize content, and even tools that take something in Viva and just translate it automatically, and then it's sent to the local market for. I mean, it's not, it doesn't stop, it doesn't do it automatically, and then it's ready to go. Obviously, there's also still a human element of checking and approving and everything, but like so much stuff that was took ages and was a lot of work, and a lot of the overlap between different agencies or different teams doing the same thing multiple times over for different silos within pharma is being removed just by the sake of kind of centralized data storage, because people can see what they have more easily. And I think that will be a huge change. We all know, we've all worked on projects where we've seen that well, didn't we do that last year? We did the same thing actually, didn't we? And once it's the silos are kind of coming down a bit, and different departments between medical or commercial, whatever, can see what's happened and what they have on the shelf, it really kind of changes that. And a lot of that is done with AI tools, so recognition, tagging, auto claim reference, and things like that. And that's where I
I mean,
see
I
industry.
think, yeah, so on that note, I mean, it makes a lot of sense to me that that would be a good thing, and AI can have a big impact on making it happen. I always, though, think, yes, but I've been around a long time in medcoms, and we've always talked about how we should centralize and we should know what we did last week and all. And actually, whatever way we go about it, you've still got humans involved who don't seem to be able to do that. And, are we really at a stage where this is game changing? Somebody wrote in last week, I've seen this, insourcing, it never quite works. Are we really at a different time? And I think we might be, personally, I think we might be, or we should be, because the power of the tools is so much greater.
Big
But
data.
I do still think you have to worry about the human element. And on that point, and maybe we'll come back to it, because you're all saying the same thing, and Annette was, I'm sure, was saying the same thing. Humans are really important in this process. We need to get it checked. I'm sorry, but I always say the same thing. Look at the people that you work with and around, and you just go, some of those people aren't that clever, really, are they? Let's be honest about it. It's like, I'm constantly, and I'm making mistakes myself and other people, and you go, actually, relying on human beings is not necessarily 100% reliable. And I think we have some sort of different approach. The robot has to be perfect, whereas human beings can do all sorts of nonsense, and we still just go, oh, well, that's okay. And I just think there's something in there that we need to keep thinking about. Accountability is a slightly different view on it. Okay, someone's got to be accountable. But in terms of getting things right, arguably technology can do some of it, certainly a lot better than human beings. Annette, and we've Liz, you were talking about the centralization, and again, following on from what we did last week, there was some discussion around this, that some companies are doing exactly that. But Annette, I remember you were saying from your perspective at Langland, you're not seeing that happening so much. But can you talk around that a little bit from an agency point of view, and does it actually concern you in any way that a pharma company might be going, let's bring everything in-house, as opposed to the current situation where a lot of the knowledge sits with you in the agency, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. I mean, we in terms of our clients, as far as I know, they're not building their own in-house teams. We're still getting, work from them and repeat work and more work and all those kinds of things. So, I mean, there's always clients, the odd one who, says, oh, I just like to use a freelancer to do X, Y, and Z directly. But when you've got these big accounts with multiple projects going on and on, I mean, we have big teams that working on them, that are building the knowledge, they have the capacity to be kind of flexible in terms of, changing needs and deadlines and all that kind of thing, and to sort of make sure everything is kind of, there's so much kind of what's the word, sort of alignments quite, but everything fits together, doesn't it? There's rarely like one piece that you're doing that doesn't relate to other pieces. So I think having, a team that works on that is very beneficial. And yeah, we haven't seen our clients taking stuff in-house. So there's not really much more I can say about it because we haven't seen it,
No,
but
that's fine. But again, it's a different perspective, and it's worth having that in the conversation. But Anna, I wanted to follow up, and I think both Ellie and Liz said the same thing in terms of, or implied the same things in terms of, and we all talk about AI, generative AI. Let's stick with generative AI, taking the grunt work away. Okay, which on one level sounds very attractive, but there were questions coming up last week about, well, that's all very attractive, but how does a medical writer even know what to do if the so-called grunt work is taken out of the equation? Because that's sort of how we learn, how people learn, how people get to the stage where they can check what the robot's doing, if I'm using slightly silly terminology there. But what's your Do you agree with that, Annette? And what's your view on that issue in terms of training new people and going through the hoops that most
I
people have
mean,
gone through?
to some extent, I agree with that. Yeah, I do. I think, you kind of have to do your time doing the kind of basic tasks and understand where these things kind of come from. But I think we have to kind of have an open mind as well. And it's very easy to say, like, you have to do all the real basic, like how many times do you have to kind of data check something to really understand what data checking
Yeah.
means? Do you have to do a lot of it? Or actually, if you've got a bright person who understands the science, understands how precise you need to be with language, understands the data, do you need to do that multiple times to be able then to do the more creative types of work? I'm not sure. So
Good
I
question,
think,
Matt.
yeah.
And
So I
is
think
there
I
an
agree to
element
some
of
extent,
the
but I think, yeah,
right?
it's easy for us to kind of old school people to say you've got to do your time doing this, but actually you can kind of fast track that a little bit more. And if you've got
And is
more
there an
time
element?
to spend on other things, then maybe you can pick those things up easily.
I mean, sorry, I'm interrupting there. Sorry, but it's just, there's an element of the older person taking revenge on the younger person by saying, "If I have to do it,
Time
you
to
have to do it,"
do
sort of thing. Yeah,
it. But no,
but Ellie,
I was very lucky.
sorry.
I started in a small agency, and I didn't start off data checking. The first thing I did was write a article for
Right.
a you know a, like an opinion piece. That's the first project I had from scratch. So I don't think I'm bad at my job. So
No. Although that does reflect that it does raise a point about different agencies being very different environments, and a medical writer can go in at entry level and do very different things and have very
yeah,
different
and I think the
experiences
world
depending
has
on the agency
changed as
environment.
well since I
Yeah.
started. I think clients have changed and the expectations have changed and all kinds of things have changed. So I don't think it's necessarily relevant today, but yeah.
Can I
Go on,
just
Liz,
have
you're
a
trying to get
comment
in.
on
Go on,
that?
yeah.
So I think this is also it's a really interesting point because it's not just on the training new writers and who will be the person that does the final approval check because they haven't had the experience before, but I think also just on a project level, I was just thinking, when if you use AI to pull out all the important information for you and to source the kind of the research and kind of summarize it in the first place, while it gets around blank page syndrome, I also kind of think that maybe like there's an argument for the fact that you actually become less able to do that writing because you don't necessarily understand it in the same way you would if you'd actually been through things and looked for things and put the pieces together in your head.
Yeah, which we discussed a
Reading
bit last week,
it,
didn't we?
exactly,
Yeah, that
like
was
just
I
reading
don't.
it and going, oh, that, well, actually, but then what do you bring then almost? It's, yeah.
But then I think that speaks, and if we want to get off the topic of AI, I think it speaks to like what the role of the medical writer is. And I think it's always been a broad role. And I've kind of always have since I feel it's a bit of a misnomer because yeah, you have to write, but
That's a
it's
tiny
only
part of
one
it.
part of the job. And I kind of feel like, that under who's the people that understand the data the most in the team? It's your
Yeah,
medical writer. So
exactly.
what do they do there?
But
They
and
need
this,
to be, yeah.
so somebody just put a question in the chat about if you sorry, Alan Thomas, if a simple light bulb thought, if all companies use the same AI platform, would the same data publication be output together? Would it be the same? And this is kind of the thing, isn't it? Because while there is a sameness to how AI kind of handles things, and you can kind of see the linguistic like marks and ticks of AI, actually no, because it totally depends on who was making that, making the storyline, who was prompting. And also, we all did kind of chat GTP on the questions from last week just to see what it'd come out with, and they were all totally different. So I don't think, I mean, it doesn't make
There were
every
similar themes, but it
yeah
wasn't presented in the same
yeah
way.
yeah
The way
and the
that it
weighting and
was,
yeah
yeah, it was different. So yeah, just a simple example like that. I'd
yeah
also like to go back, Liz, to the point that you were making about if we're starting with an AI generated starting point, does that mean that people are going to be losing the capacity to kind of search? I would say the same thing could have been said when PubMed came along.
Or
And it
Google.
actually did, yeah, or Google, yeah. And this is going to stop people being able to research. I think it's actually just changing the way that we research. And if we're not using that, then it's going to mean that we're at a disadvantage. So I think it's more about how we look at what comes out critically and then tweak and think and reflect on the sources that are brought up to
Yeah.
see whether they're actually the right things, or if we need to go back and say, actually, can you
go in this direction now.
Well, I mean, there's no doubt, is there, that like obviously, if the internet was turned off overnight, like nobody would be able to get home from the pub without like maybe that one, but like nobody can navigate. Nobody knows like how you cook things anymore. Doesn't have a recipe book because you just Google BBC and like good food or whatever, and then that's your dinner. So I think yeah, it totally changes the way we all behave in, as a tool, the way we behave and everything. So and I think it's inevitable that we will have to change. We will have to change our mindset and work with different ways. I always think of the. It's a very tired example now, but the Blockbuster kind of moment when they decided that they weren't actually going to start doing online streaming because everybody likes videos and it'll be fine. And then along comes Netflix and bye bye, nobody knows who Blockbuster are anymore. But like, I guess this is the thing, we need to see what's on the horizon and see what's coming and not be stubborn about where we are in that and work out how we find our niche in the new world and in the kind of the way forward. And
Yeah,
yeah.
how we use it sort of judiciously as well. Because you're right, I think it will change the way that we search. But I think what worries me is almost like you to lose the kind of browsing kind of
Yeah.
functionality. And that's
Yeah.
also true in, we've seen it in sort of social media, like people living in these kind of echo chambers and you hearing
Yeah,
back
well, yeah.
putting in. It's the same thing.
Yeah, it becomes
We need to
biased
make
just
sure
because, yeah, you're not
we're
looking left
asking
and right.
questions and we're looking for the things that we don't know. And which, the unknown unknowns, I don't know how you do that, but I think we've got to be
Yeah.
mindful of that.
But that
I
also,
think
that.
it's partly around how you prompt.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah.
using things like asking it to come up with non-obvious things, depending on the kind of thing that you're searching for, or going for creative mode, that can bring out things that you're not necessarily going to expect. That's not always going to be appropriate depending on the type of work that you're doing, but it can kind of be a nice way of broadening your perspective when you are doing that background research. Someone's in the chat asked if it's likely that the role of the medical writer is going to evolve into a medical editor. I kind of would almost say like almost the other way around because I feel like
Yeah.
the language capabilities of things like ChatGPT, I think I'd be more worried about being an editor than a writer because I think the writing role is
That
very
can be more
broad, as
automated, maybe, yeah.
yeah. Yeah, whereas actually there's no doubt about it, ChatGPT, et cetera, can write well.
Okay, so I guess what's obviously what's behind that question is the idea that increasingly the tools will write more of the content. And what's important is the human QC, fact-checking, editing side of things to make sure it is right. And that leads you to think about editors. I mean, I think one of the problems with these sorts of discussions increasingly, and it's probably been true for a while, is the terminology is probably just getting out of date. If do we really want medical writers, medical editors? Are you seeing any already? Are you seeing any change in
I tried to change our
terminology?
job titles years ago. I had a proposal
Did
because I
you?
kind of
Right.
felt like medical writing was too broad, but because it's such a regular term, people know it needed it. It didn't really go anywhere. But I kind of feel like it's more about, I talk about content development because I think also there's all the visuals and stuff that you put on a page. And again, just to sort of try and spin out of AI, I think one of the important things that a writer can do is to be able to trans as we're developing more creative kind of content, as we need to grab attention, even in medical affairs, even in the kind of very scientific side of things, there's a need to, do perhaps more creative work to, make an impact, and it helps also explain things educationally. So there's a need for that medical writer who understands intricately the data to be able to translate that into something that a designer, a creative can then use to come up with a nice visualization or concept. And I think that, even if you have a, AI, it's never going to be able to explain it in the same way. So somebody who's not a scientist, that's not their skill set. They've got a very different capabilities and skills and experience that you really want to leverage, actually, because no one person can do everything. And I think that that's one of the real benefits is being able to have that dialogue between those people with different skill sets. And that's where the writer becomes like critically important because they're the ones that really understand the nuances and go, oh, that's not quite right because it doesn't quite reflect the science and that.
And we as humans, we still have a huge advantage over any sort of machine because we can still do emotion, we can still do sympathy and empathy and things like, I think content strategy and that direction of understanding who you're talking to and what they're kind of what matters most to them and what part of their journey they're on and how they need to engage with different materials, different data at different points. I think that's probably where we need to evolve to. That's what we need to make our job, and maybe that it goes with the name change. But I think that's exactly what humans who have possibly already been medical writers or want to be medical writers should be looking at. Like, how do we then insert ourselves in the kind of the content ecological landscape of what's happening, and where do we find our niche to actually provide something that AI and that technology can't really, the human interface.
Again, just picking up on what the questions that were coming in last week, they were talking about, surely medical writers are trained as critical thinkers and AI can't do that. But just as you're talking, Liz, I'm sitting there thinking about some of my conversations with ChatGPT, and certainly there are trials now which have shown that, a lot of people can get quite a lot of empathy out of a chatbot. So again, I suppose all I'm saying, all I'm thinking as you're talking is, maybe it's not quite as clear cut as that. And actually, a lot of people, what is, empathy and so on, what does that mean in reality? And if someone is sitting there chatting to a chat box and doesn't realize it, that sort of does your head in a little bit, but it changes the thinking, doesn't it? And sorry, I'm going to stop there and ask, because you're, have you got a
it's
point,
getting
an answer
better
to that?
at
That you'd still argue
recognizing.
it's not the same.
Well, I don't think it can be, because it's not actually thinking. It's not actually reflecting on a moment in its time when it had something similar. It can recognize patterns of language. It can recognize words that are used, that, and it still is like data in, data out, essentially. So, even if you had a massive data set and large models, like, it would still only be able to work on the experience that it has, and
By definition, it's not coming up with anything new.
yeah,
But by definition, and that's what,
it
like,
can be really close, and it can be really, it can by chance, like your horoscope, fit really well, but it can also make a complete, like, if you ask it, yeah, it works very well on things that are very regular, and it recognizes the pattern, and it understands what this is likely to be. But then human emotions are messy, especially around disease and therapy and treatments, like, and they're not things that, I mean, even two people undergoing the same procedure in the same way, they're likely to have slightly different variations of the same thing. So I think humans will still be better at that for a long time. I
it's a bit like
hope.
regression to a mean,
However,
isn't it?
I'm sorry, I'm going to cut it, because I get a bit excited about this sort of stuff, because it sort of assumes that again, human beings are great and they do all this stuff. I can sit there in front of my GP and get no empathy, no anything. I'm just being shoved out as fast as I can. If three of us sat in front of the same GP in every 5 minute interval, you're not getting those variations. And I can sit there with a chatbot and I can ask in my own way anything I want. And I'm in a conversation which is very personal and can be very, very empathetic if you look at it like that. And I just think that's just, it's just a different way of thinking, but it just recognizes that human beings aren't quite
And
what we all want them to be.
but well, yes, but there are also lots of human beings that are not, that recognize in themselves that they're not very good at emotional connection, and that have to learn rules and recognize patterns to be able to then front that as well. And there are
To be able
also,
to deal with it, yeah.
and there are also people that are good at things and bad at things anyway. So I think what the best medical writers that I've ever had are the ones who just get it. And there's not much you can actually even say, as long as you've been trained there. It's like understanding what's missing, understanding what you need to actually achieve, what the aim of the objective of what you're doing is. Lots of people can sit down and write something. Whether it actually meets the goal of what you need, that's rare. And that's what makes a good medical writer, somebody who listens to the brief, understands it, reads between the lines, understands the context of what they're doing, how it needs to engage the reader, what the ultimate objective is, even if that's not the full written objective or the full external objective. And that, I think, would be very hard. And in the same way, it would be, even if you were prompting any sort of AI to do that, you would still need to understand that yourself in order to be able to ask it to do what you want it to do. So I think that's where we can still excel, and we can still find our place in this kind of new ecosystem.
This is very AI dominated, I know, and it's but equally AI is just
Well, but it's
intruding on everything at the moment. But what I was going to say is, again, a comment. I'm just reading some of the stuff that's coming. You need to know what good like what you need to know what good looks like, and there's a danger that we just go, anyway, the computer says that, and so on. And that's just a point that's worth maybe sharing. It's just quite a nice point. Mediocrity we talked about, and there were questions about mediocrity last week, I remember. And I certainly have a view that it's surprising how many people are happy with mediocrity. And if somebody says, let's just take a very simple, stupid example, with PLS. We have to have a PLS for every article. If there's a cheaper, more efficient way of producing lots of PLS very fast, why would the procurement manager not expect you to take that route? And AI takes it to a different level, but the principle is there, isn't it? We can argue that a good technical writer can do a better job, maybe, but there is an argument in there, isn't there? Which isn't just AI related, it's just about life in general.
I
And
think as well, maybe then there is actually even an advantage because if you're wanting to do plain language, then using large language models that uses the most common language and doesn't go out like I think one thing that writers always struggle with is not using the big words or not using the technical terms because it's just so in our DNA. We've
it's
learned it
in there,
forever. Taking it out almost feels like an insult. So a machine can do that really well because it does. It has no attachment, no personal like preference over whether you use that word or that word. It's just a word, and it spells it out very quickly and simply. And I think that's exactly what that actually plays to its strengths there. And even if they are the same kind of or they look samey, then that's actually kind of good because it means that the people you're aiming it at, don't have to every time find it like orientate themselves in a new structure or a new way of writing something. It's very consistent. So, yeah.
I think there's also the opportunity for not exactly complex language summaries, but sort of more targeted summaries. So you can kind of go in and say, well, what does this mean for me as a haematologist or whatever, and have the kind of nuances pulled out from sort of data and papers in a way that's much more targeted to the reader rather than just a general thing that's kind of supposed to be doing the same thing for everybody. I think that's something that hasn't really been explored because there just hasn't been the capacity in the past.
Yeah. Again, one thing that I think is worth making the point of is we're talking about medical writing. We're talking about medical writing in med comms. That's a broad enough, spectrum of activity, and we all differ a little bit on how we define that. Medical writing is a very, very broad spectrum of activity. And I can certainly, I know there are medical writers who are losing their livelihoods because actually their sort of medical writing is being done by machine. I just wondered whether we can try and come at this from a slightly different point of view and talk about the changing working practices and so on, and the fact that changing working practices, digital solutions, whatever, mean that we've got a global population of people who can do medical writing. Medical writing hubs are developing in different areas of the world. Maybe that brings with it its own set of training challenges and resourcing challenges and so on. But that for me is a big change in the last 5 years, is that medical writing has it's broadened its scope, but it's also just broadened the participation of people from different parts of the world and different coming from different backgrounds. Blah, blah, blah. Have you got any sort of comments on that? Or am I leading us in the wrong direction there? Anybody, Liz, what's your experience? And what, because I think I'm right in saying that you are looking at bringing people in to medical writing in very different parts of the world than you would have been possibly a few years ago. Is that
Well,
right? Or am I
yes,
missing the boat?
absolutely. Part of our aim is to open careers in medical writing up in regions where it wouldn't have been a thing before. And I think, we've all been very lucky, it was in this group anyway, that we were all native English speakers. And I mean, I certainly wouldn't have been living in Switzerland, living the life I am now, if I hadn't have happened to be a native English speaker. And pre-Brexit, it was wonderful. But I think that, and also this, I mean, we have to be honest, that also comes into things like, Brexit has been a really difficult thing for trying to recruit native speaking medical writers because it becomes very complicated. And now with language models and Gen AI, the actual language skills becomes less of a critical factor because there's a lot that you can get by without needing to worry about so much. And also for, the advantage of having people that spoke second languages and were medical writers, that's also kind of that advantage is gone a bit because you can do it with just translation. I think the thing that I find really good about that is it kind of levels the playing field a bit. So scientists or doctors or pharmacists that are leaving academia and want to, and have the same thing that we all do, where you're like, oh, I really like the science, but I really don't like the lab, or I really don't like the patients. Like, wanting to do something with your background, but not knowing what comes next on a traditional, like your career path, medical writing is still a great option because it gives you the ability to use your science and use your critical thinking and use your I don't know, hopefully empathy and your kind of social skills to do something constructive, but you don't necessarily always have to be then a native speaker of languages because you can use AI to some extent to help you with that. And I know we all got a bit upset last week because it is very close to our hearts that we all think that our language skills are like the be all and end all, and that's really critical to everything we do. But if we're honest, it's becoming less so. And I think that does open the doors in different hubs and different countries. And also economically, there are advantages to being in different places sometimes. So, yeah, I think
What do you think,
undoubtedly.
Annette,
I've
from
been
your
thinking
point of
about
view, right
this.
in the oh sorry, Ellie, go on, go on.
Sorry, I've been
I'm gonna go
thinking
to
about this
Annette
one a
first,
lot.
sorry. Okay,
So,
I'm gonna come. Yeah, go on, go on.
can I? Yeah, but yeah.
Run with
I
it.
think language skills can definitely be enhanced by generative AI and other kind of tools to check and make sure that everything is grammatically correct and spelt right and that word choices and things like that. I think the thing that can't necessarily be trained in terms of a person and is harder sometimes for generative AI would be the storytelling side and knowing how to actually kind of get the right information across in the right way to that specific audience. And that is sometimes where people who want to become medical writers actually fall down because they can, you know, string together a sentence in a beautiful way, but those sentences don't hang together to form a coherent piece of work. And it's really hard to go back to a medical writer and or some, you know, a prospective medical writer and say, no, this is not going to work because it's so kind of subjective, and that storytelling aspect is really hard to break down and get across to somebody if that's just not how their brain works. So I think that could be something that sort of opens up but also closes down opportunities.
I 100% agree with
Right.
you, Ellie, on that because I think, and when you get writing tests from people and you know people who have never you know been a medical writer, so you know they're completely fresh, completely blank canvas. If people have got a, you know, they've used a comma and they should have used a semicolon, or they've, you know, used compared with when they should have used than, or whatever it might be, I'm not too worried about that because I'm like, well, I can teach them that, but what I can't teach is how to put a story together. And I think you've, to be honest with you, I think you've either got it or you haven't. I think I can look back at my work when I was 8 years old, and I can put a story together. You know, and nobody's probably taught me that. It just is a natural thing, and you do. I totally agree. I think it's a really, really hard thing to teach. You can probably fine-tune, and you can probably, you know, tweak around the edges. And I'm sure, hopefully, I'm a better writer than I was when I was 8 now. But you know, I don't think fundamentally, like you say, I think it's the way that your kind of brain works or not.
Yeah,
So I
it's
agree.
definitely something you can hone and develop, but if you don't have that starting point there as just part of how your brain works intuitively, then I think it's incredibly difficult to actually get onto that road, sort of thing. Can I be really like inflammatory now and just chuck a spanner in the works? Because actually, one of the things that you can do really quickly and easily with AI and with analytics is A/B testing. So you can have two versions of something and you can go, which one works? Which one resonates best with your audience? Right, that one doesn't, scrap it, go with that one, and then make another version and iterate towards something. So then also maybe do we need do it? Because I had a really interesting experience recently in kind of session we had and we all, as medical writers, think that we know what good content looks like, and we think we know what the audience want to see. And we had a content strategist come in, and she showed us various examples of different versions and said, which one will the audience prefer? So, for example, it was a website, and it was a really kind of chewy, data heavy, lots of lines and lots of text and lots of really the sort of thing that you look at as a medical writer and just go, oh God, that needs rewriting. And then there was a really nice clean version where it'd been made into an algorithm, so you didn't see everything at the same time. You had to click through and it walks you through the data. And they put that out to test with hematologists. Guess which one the hematologist preferred? Because somehow in their
Complex.
hearts, they want to see the complicated data. I don't know, maybe they want to feel clever looking at this big complex page. They don't want a simple, clean flow of information. Who knows? But we think we know what people want, but we can be very wrong.
But then we could also say that, you know, your hematologist, when you ask them, they want to sound like they're clever, and so they're going to say the one with all the details, but
Well, no, but the,
are they actually
no.
going to read it?
It's what they interacted with. It's not even what they
Oh, okay.
said. It's what the, where they clicked, where their eyes tracked. It really like it's, and that's the thing. It's not because I agree. People say what they think they should say, or they want to appear like they, oh, I'm very lofty academic. Of course, I like the data. But actually, the thing about, using content ecosystems is you can see how people interact with it, and they don't even realize you're looking.
A
So.
similar thing though, with, and I think a lot of people, and I still think it's true, but I think it's about understanding your audience and not having those kind of deeper insights. But yeah, I mean, years ago, I remember everybody talks about bite-sized content, blah, 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 blah. And we asked a bunch of like doctors how, what they want. And they're like, you know what, actually, I really want the hour-long webinar when you're actually discussing in depth this kind of paper. And everyone's like, we must do bite-sized. We can't do anything longer than 5 minutes, even
But then,
5 minutes is
if
too
you
long.
ask me, I would say I like to read books. I like to read articles. I can't tell you the last time I picked up an article and actually read it from start to finish. I can tell you the last time I sat on the loo and browsed loads of short form content because it's a captive audience.
Exactly.
So we have to understand how, and this is again, this plays into how we as humans can understand how humans behave. We can, yes, of course, we can do analytics, we can do insights, we can analyze what's happening with content that's out in the world. But then to understand what those insights mean, you need to be able to interpret them as a human because it can give you loads of data. But what does that mean? Why might that be? That's where
And I
a lot
think this then becomes again like how's the role of the writer kind of changing? And we're going to hopefully, get more and more metrics on, what's happening out in the world with the content that we produce. And we need to learn from that, such that, it's great that we can test and learn, but wouldn't it be even better for us to have people that actually knew genuinely based on knowledge of different kinds of data? It's not just science. Now it's kind of people saying, right, well, we know typically that this is what's going to resonate in this situation. So you don't have to test so many times, and so actually what you put out is nearer to being the, the optimal
Well,
than
but do you? Because actually, what we should be looking for is knowing our customers kind of dynamically, and not just at the time that we think we know, but because our customers change and their age range changes. We discussed last time most HCPs and opinion leaders are now kind of digital natives or becoming so, and people evolve as well. And we evolve the way I remember quite vividly the days when I read a book on the bus, and I don't anymore. I don't even take it with me because I know full well I'm going to sit scrolling on my phone. Like our behavior evolves with, and I think this is where we can actually pull really heavily as medical writers because we are also people, and we are also people who come from a certain sphere of kind of education maybe and background. So we don't know what everybody like us does, and I think we make the mistake of thinking that everybody else does what we do. We can add some context to, like, is this likely to be in the right place at the right time for this person? Or, and then with the insights and data to back it up, I think we can really help to design, to not just write stuff, but get it read and get it digested and understood. And that's where I think we can advise and offer that role, the strategic role.
think, I
Can
mean,
I
again,
just.
I can't just go on. You
There's
go
a
first.
question on the chat asking about what AI can and can't do. And I just wanted to say, there's a really good Coursera that's because people were asking last week, what's free? What can I access for free? On Coursera, there's a course about understanding AI or something. I can't remember the top of my head what it's called. And it's free. You don't get to do the assessment then. But if you just want to access the course materials, it's completely free. It's about 3 weeks or 4 weeks of learning, I think. It's by somebody called Andrew Ng, I think, NG. I would recommend if you want to understand what AI can and can't do and the basics of AI in a very scary lay sense, go and watch it. It will open your eyes. Sorry, Peter, carry on.
No, I'm just wondering how someone watching the video is going to find that because I'm
I'm
not
gonna
quite sure we know
share
exactly
it in
what
the
it's
chat
called.
now.
Okay, and maybe if you do it quickly, then maybe we can say it out loud for the person watching the video sort of thing. There's a couple of questions coming in about patience and so on. I mean, and that was what was going through my head a little bit when you were talking just now. I mean, this empathy, this understanding what the audience wants and so on. But in the last few years, a lot of medical writing, content creation, and so on has been influenced very heavily by actually putting patients around a table and asking them and getting involved in discussions and so on. And again, a bit, I think, like Liz is saying, we make assumptions about what people want, and we talk a lot about doing what people want, but actually it can be quite a surprise when you get the person in front of you talking about what you're doing or user testing or whatever. We're over time, so I was hoping we could just finish on, and I'm going to finish with Annette, a little bit of a view on, because again we've had questions coming in terms of recruitment, new people, new medical writers coming into the business. Are you looking for different sorts of people, different skill sets? Are you handling them different? There was, I think Lydia was talking about if all the grunt work's going, what advice have you got for a new medical writer coming into the business? Just in a couple of
I
minutes,
mean,
just maybe finish off by talking about that.
probably going to end up sort of probably repeating what I said last time, but I think I think what the world is moving so fast that what I am looking for in medical writers is people that are, want to embrace new things, that us, want to learn, whatever that is, and have that kind of proactivity and that kind of curious kind of mindset where they're intrigued about things and they want to understand. And actually, that's true of science. So it's understand, when somebody, I want someone that's not just going to take, read something, take it at face value and just be like, oh, okay. I want them to think, hang on a minute, that seems a bit odd to me. I'm going to look up a bit more information on that because it seems a bit strange. I don't fully understand. It frustrates the hell out of me when, and it hasn't happened for a long time, thank goodness. What great team when people, say, well, why did you write that? Oh, it said it in the paper. I don't care if it said it in the paper or not. You don't understand it, so how am I supposed to understand it? It doesn't make any sense. So, people that are going to question and dig into things, and I think in the world with new technologies, then it also that kind of personality trait, somebody who's keen to learn and find out and understand things, and bring that to us as an agency so that we can all learn, is absolutely what I am looking for and what I've always been looking for. Those at the moment we haven't changed our writing tests or anything like that. We might think about it just because I think, ChatGPT can do an amazing job, and it's entirely possible that people might use that to their advantage and, get a bit of an unfair advantage over people that have sort of done it themselves. So we may look at things like that, and we may do bring some of the testing in-house and get people just to sit in a room and do things, rather than do it before. I don't know, we're thinking about it at the moment, but fundamentally I'm looking for people who, who've got a bright mind and who are keen to learn.
Yeah, I
Okay,
would also
okay.
say that I don't think the grunt work has completely disappeared yet.
It certainly hasn't, no, not yet.
Okay, okay.
Just on that
Okay, look
point.
to go on.
So I'm actually thinking about redoing our entrance test so that we find people who can responsibly use AI, because at the end of the day, I want them to know how to use AI and I want them to show their initiative, but I want transparency and I want people to tell me exactly what they've done and how they've done it. And then I hope I might learn something because I'm an old goat and I need to learn about how other new younger people approach things too. So that's, yeah.
Okay. Look, guys, we can carry on. In fact, we might just come back next week, I guess. Just to try and cover that off, Liz, you mentioned the course AI for Everyone on Coursera. The instructor is Andrew Ng, NG, Andrew NG. If someone wants to go and look for that, I think they'll find it fairly easily if they go to Coursera.org. But I just wanted to be clear for someone watching the video that there's hopefully there's a signpost there. I'm going to draw the line there. I just want to carry on going. I'm going to draw the line there for the recording. I'm going to say huge thanks to you guys. I think we just, as I say, led into more discussion, which is great. Anybody in the audience, well, I'll say on your behalf as panelists, anybody in the audience or watching the video, welcome to talk to you via LinkedIn is the easy way is to contact you. Anyone who's interested in what I'm doing, medcomsnetworking.com, obviously, and I'm always happy to hear from anyone about anything. So in these very strange and whatever times, I'm going to say, wish you all luck and try and find the stop record button and give us a quick wave and say goodbye, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.